The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's June the 6th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news. There's a farm bill proposal apparently out there that would limit state rights to tighten food policy issues. And the president of the largest farm management and real estate firm in the nation says next year's cash rents could make a record-setting jump higher. Some of that jump, of course, is related to demand from the ethanol industry. Last week, while in Europe, courtesy of the German Marshall Fund, I got a first-hand look at an ethanol plant in the Netherlands. It was small, but as you'll hear, the company has been doing some interesting second-generation or cellulosic ethanol research. It involves elephant dung. Yeah, you heard that right. More later. Speaking of later, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us just after the bottom of the hour to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This is Les Schulte, Director of Corporate Support. WILL has made a significant commitment to providing area farmers and agribusiness professionals with the best information possible. But we need your support to help continue and grow this service. If you own or manage a business, consider supporting WILL through one of our business programs. Call 217-333-0850 for more information.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the July wheat pit at 7 3/4 lower, 519.5 the settlement price. September's at 534.5. They finished down 8 3/4, and December futures were off 7 cents at 547.5. July corn futures, $3.74 3/4, down 5.5. September down 4.25. Settlement price there at 381.5, and December futures at 381.25. Down 1.5. July soybean futures, 6 cents lower at $8.22 1/4. The August at $8.29 3/4, down 6. And November beans down 5 3/4 at $8.53 1/2. July bean meal futures at $223.90. They're up 30 for the day. July bean oil down 37 at $35.90. Feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange down $1.10 at $109.77 1/2 in the August contract. June futures in the lean live cattle pit at $90 even. We're down $1.02 1/2 in the August contract at $1.30 lower at $89.72 1/2. June lean hogs were down $1.30 as well at $73.35. From the outside markets, July crude oil at $65.98 a barrel, now trading 37 cents higher. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,462 is currently down just about 134 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on a Wednesday afternoon, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about the commodity markets. A rally in the bean pit yesterday to new contract highs and a reversal down today. Expectations for the overnight and tomorrow.
One thing in commodity trading textbook, whenever we see a major market leader, so to speak, in the palm oil area, Malaysia took profits down sharply, it sent the signal that the soybean oil was also due to somewhat of a correction. It's been a nonstop rally for several weeks. There was even talk that they were going to put an export tax on palm oil exports out of Malaysia, which means every other vegetable oil in the world has an advantage of price advantage with those higher taxes. What I think the weather was put on the back burner in most of the markets today. A lot of people had headlines that it might be a little drier on the extended models. The overnight weather models have more influence, the early AM weather models, I'm going to say, have the most influence on commodity trading. My general impression is that the bean market is the strongest market of all the grains being traded in Chicago, as well as the bean oil. And I think that that's going to continue with its dominance for two reasons. You know, the supply-demand is going to be snug a year from now. The incentives to plant a lot more soybeans is going to be very competitively at somewhat of a disadvantage with other commodities. And as a result of that, the beans, even with talk of a smaller bean acreage this year, you know, have all the attention on the exchange trading floor, and beans also suffer from dry weather if that would so occur.
Let's talk just a bit more about the bean market and the reasons that it might rally or the reasons that it is rallying and has rallied. Part of that comes out of the palm oil side on the idea that Europe and other places around the globe will be depending primarily on biodiesel in the future, or making a move towards biodiesel in the future. We've been talking about that for a couple of years, I think, on the air, but not really seeing it come to fruition. Maybe we're in the beginning stages of that at this point. And then there are a couple of other things that maybe we should discuss as it relates to Brazil, on the idea that their exchange on the real is making it tougher for them to put beans in the ground. It's not as cheap as it used to be. So is there some idea that not only do the beans need to rally in order to stay up with palm oil and the potential for biodiesel to suck up a lot of the palm oil and vegetable oils to be made available through soybeans for food usage, but that also that because of the exchange rate on the currencies, that it's going to they need to buy acres, and it's just simply going to cost more to produce beans in South America, and they'll need to buy acres at a higher
price? That's part of
the
equation, and also it's more glamorous to raise sugar cane and possibly raise corn in South America as well. So the same competitive forces that's facing the acreage shift in central Illinois is also being focused on in South America, and of course, you know, it's the topic of conversation that not only can sugar cane, sugar, be turned into ethanol, renewable energy, but corn as well. And, of course, we all know that it's profitable to do so. The problem is, as I understand it, there's not the risk capital and people willing to invest in that soybean acre expansion like there has been in the past. And as a result of that, the balance of acreage increase is going to be slowed down some. And as a result of that, that augurs well for U.S. soybean prices in Chicago at the Board of Trade.
Were you suggesting, I don't think you were, but I want to double check this, that were you suggesting that the Brazilian and Argentine farmers, now Argentine I understand, but the Brazilian farmers might opt to a higher value crop such
on
as corn
and also sugar cane. Mm-hmm. We understand that there is this tug of war to go to more value added corn, and they realize the costs of and the other factor that we understand going into the equation is it's almost impossible. You know, the cost of transportation in Brazil, for example, is very expensive to get, and it's easier to ship gallons of alcohol instead of bushels of soybeans and corn. So there is this equation to move not only into value added, but also reduce the transportation cost by even shifting acres into ethanol and from sugarcane and corn. So it's really a new game there, and that's what's also equating to higher soybean prices, veggie oil prices in the world. And also, we do have some growing world economies that are bidding for vegetable oil for edible purposes, and that's also a fun part of the equation.
It'd be interesting, and I don't know, maybe we should explore this more, but economically speaking, I understand the
fact it's a little bit like the old guy in Kentucky, you know, it's easier to ship barrels than the bushels, Todd, and we'll sit down over a glass of water and talk about that one.
I understand that, and maybe we can get some Jack Daniels at some point, but we can talk about it. I guess I'm thinking about this just a little bit, that after my conversations with Blair Omaggi a couple of weeks ago when he was in, and the idea that he was looking maybe potentially to produce ethanol in that nation, but using that as a second generation, that they were going to double crop, and he already was raising, I think, about 100,000 acres of double crop corn after his soybeans, but he didn't have a marketplace for it, so he was just going to build a market. But the idea that they might go to what we would call first-year corn, or that would be their primary crop, and then possibly follow it with soybeans or some other crop, I suppose.
And I think they even realize that they get a little more bang to the buck out of their rotation. It works, and that's another thing that I've heard catches their attention as well.
So what do we have to watch in the marketplace? There are so many variable factors here. What do we do?
Well, I think the marketplace needed a correction.
The palm oil, you mean?
Palm oil, and also the wheat market needed a little bit of profit-taking. The French wheat market also caught the world, with the sell-off. So, in grain trading or commodity trading, you always look at the highest price market. And the French wheat was extremely high-priced, and they took profits, and I think that also led to profit-taking in the wheat pits and the soybean pits and corn pits in Chicago. Weather is a major concern, and several of the private meteorologists, and I talked to one today, said, there are chances Thursday, Friday, and then the middle of next week, but, at some point in time, the forecast hasn't materialized, and we do have to see rain in the rain gauge. I think today the market has really gotten ahead of itself on some of these drier forecasts, and I think that was one reason why we saw profit taking today.
Anything out of livestock that we should discuss?
They're struggling in here, and maybe high energy prices mean less meat on the table and less hog and beef and poultry demand. But one thing about it is the USDA is trying to do everything possible to get beef being traded in the world economy, and that's a positive note.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you on Friday for Commodity Week, and maybe we can...
And we'll talk about that, turning bushels into ethanol and saving on transportation costs.
Maybe we can do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
Have
much.
Have a good one.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Our own Mike Sola forecast for tonight calls for the northern sections, partly cloudy skies, a few evening showers across the two states. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 60 in eastern Indiana to 72 in northwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, Mike says, in northwestern Illinois, partly sunny, some showers possible during the morning, then showers and thunderstorms arriving in the afternoon. Some storms may be severe. Elsewhere, mostly sunny, windy, and very warm. Highs tomorrow from 87 in northwestern Illinois to 94 in the southern part of Indiana. Tomorrow, some powerful southerly winds will blanket Illinois and Indiana on Thursday, too. Peak winds speeds will range from 15 in the eastern part of Indiana to 30 in portions of central Illinois, with gusts up to 50 miles an hour. The minimum relative humidity levels will range from 35 to 55%. Dave Dickey's here now. He'll take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a farm bill proposal headed for the full House Agriculture Committee would ensure that states cannot adopt stronger rules on food products than those set by USDA. And some outside Congress are saying the proposal would also prevent states from placing any restrictions on biotech crops that have been deregulated by USDA. The proposal was tacked on the end of livestock language for the Farm Bill. It reads, notwithstanding any other provision of law, no state or locality shall make any law prohibiting the use and commerce of an article that the Secretary of Agriculture has inspected or passed, or determined to be of non-regulated status. The president of Farmers National, the largest farm management and real estate firm in the nation, is predicting that cash rents for 2008 could match the steepest year-to-year increase in a generation. Jim Farrell says cash rent for 2007 was mostly negotiated before corn prices jumped to more than $4. Federal lawmakers are criticizing USDA and South Korea for the latest flap that has closed Seoul to U.S. beef. Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin emphatically says USDA, quote, had better get on top of it. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns took a different tack.
Much like Japan, there are going to be some startup speed bumps, if you will, and we want to solve those very, very quickly. I am very confident that we can get them the information that they need. We can do it expeditiously, solve the problem, get beef moving, and continue our discussions about moving to the OIE standard.
Harkin also warned South Korea that if the beef issue is not resolved, there could be a trade war between the two nations that will hurt South Korean imports. Harkin says trade between the U.S. and South Korea is, in his words, a house of cards that could come down pretty hard. House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson told South Georgia producers that fruit and vegetable crop farmers should be included in the Farm Bill, but he made no guarantee that there will be enough money to include them. Peterson told a Tifton, Georgia crowd to, and this is a direct quote, stick with us and I hope we can find enough money. House Ag Committee member Jim Marshall, also of Georgia, predicted that the programs will be authorized, but there won't be any money to pay for them. Meanwhile, Peterson is being criticized for his Farm Bill draft of the sugar program. It would continue the current program the next 5 years, but critics say the current program won't work after January 1, 2008, when NAFTA frees up sweetener trade between the U.S. and Mexico. And in an effort to make trade more transparent, China plans on introducing new soy import rules that requires buyers to report purchases of soybeans or soy meal within 72 hours. The PRC did not indicate when the rule will take effect. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, a company in Europe is licensing a potential way to produce cellulosic ethanol. I'll have more from my trip last week to the Netherlands. In a briefing to U.S. agricultural reporters traveling with the German Marshall Fund in Europe, a manager from Royal Nadalco presented information on a yeast that may be fully capable of processing cellulosic ethanol, says Mark Wahlberg.
It's a proven technology in the lab, but it's not proven technology on industrial scale. So if you want to license it on a large scale, you first have to prove that it really works. So that's why we are very eager to start producing with this technology, because we really believe it works.
The company would like to build a new 200 million liter ethanol plant. It would use the new yeast for the fermentation process. The yeast has been genetically modified and it includes the DNA of a fungus found in elephant dung. Researchers discovered the gene in 2004. Wahlberg says it took 2 years to isolate and transfer that gene into a yeast that can be used to process first and second generation ethanol.
Well, the yeast is not only capable of fermenting C6 sugars, the sugars available in first generation feedstock, but it's also capable of fermenting C5 or pentose or wood sugars. And wood sugars are 25% part of any given biomass structure. So if you're not able to ferment those sugars, you leave out quite some sugars.
Still, Mark Wahlberg admits there are problems with the second-generation ethanol production. The Nadalco yeast can be implemented in the ethanol process today, possibly achieving a 10% boost in output. But in order to produce ethanol from things like corn stover or miscanthus, both second-generation ethanol inputs, two other production process problems must be solved.
No, it's mainly the first two steps, the pre-treatment of the biomass and the enzymes. And those are quite costly, the most costly steps. So miscanthus is quite a complex structure, so you need to pre-treat it quite thoroughly. And same goes for basically cutting the sugars into fermentable sugars. You use enzymes for that. And those are quite complex processes, and for the feedstock the wheat residues we are going to use, that's relatively easy. So that's why we don't start with wood or miscanthus or straw.
Nadalco says its yeast with a gene from a fungus found in elephant dung is a proven technology in the lab. It has not been tested on a commercial scale. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. I traveled to Poland, Belgium, the Netherlands, and France as a journalism fellow of the German Marshall Fund of the United States. The fund was established by Germany to promote transatlantic understanding of social and political issues. You can learn more at www.gmfus.org. I was one of 14 on the trip. Well, as of June the 5th, we still have about $420,500 to raise to reach our fundraising goal. That means our gas gauge reads 80% full. Help power the engines so WILL can bring you a full year of programs and service. Just call us 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455 with a contribution today. You can also go online at willag.org and hit pledge. Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and in the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Well, hello to you too, Todd.
We probably better skip the Mercantile Exchange is my guess, but let's stay with the grains. What do you say?
I think I don't want to talk about the Merc.
I think that's a good idea. So in your area, tell me about the cash grain market over the past couple of weeks, and has it been able to stay up at all with the rally that happened in the soybean pit?
Believe it or not, now bean levels are slipping a little bit. There's been quite a bit of farmer selling, and we made some new contract ties in beans, so that pulled a lot out of the country. So bean basis levels are just, they continue to struggle, but corn values have gone up probably 8 cents as far as train values are concerned since you and I talked last week, and not a lot of farmers selling in corn, but they've been doing a good bit of beans. So it's been kind of a busy week in the bean market here.
Pretty interesting on the train values to the southeast, feeding hog and broilers there. So the idea is that with corn prices under $4, they're going to go on ahead and continue to set those broilers?
I honestly believe that demand is really good in corn, even though exports have fallen off, and I think you're going to find probably a little bit more chopped off maybe come Monday. Demand has to be good because, you know, it just seems ridiculous to me that, you know, we had this huge carryout. We had piles last year going into harvest. And, you know, I think there's a lot of disappearance out there. So this corn market could get real interesting towards the end of summer, Todd. Mm-hmm. I really think it could.
Especially if we have a little heat and a little weather, we could find some interesting moves to the topside, I would think.
Very possibly.
What are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is $3.75, beans are $7.90, and wheat is $4.55.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the agricultural weather. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL in Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Be sure to visit our website at WILLAG.org. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A former public health administrator in Champaign County has withdrawn his name as an applicant for the county's Board of Health. 2 years ago, David King resigned as the head of Champaign-Urbana's public health district. During his 6 years, the group Champaign County Healthcare Consumers criticized King for staffing problems at the Child Dental Clinic and Community Nursing Program, as well as administrative costs. Today, King said after he met with Champaign County Board Chair Pius Weibel, he decided it wasn't the best time to return to public health, saying it could distract from the work at hand. The CU Public Health District's current director is on leave. King says he still hopes to serve on the Board of Health or another capacity later. Urbana teachers are assured of pay hikes of 4% or more over the next 3 years. The school board has approved a new 3-year contract with the Urbana Teachers Association. Union members ratified the deal on Monday. The contract is in place well before the start of school in August. It calls for pay raises as well as a bigger contribution from the district for health insurance premiums. University libraries in the Big Ten Conference are going digital. Up to 10 million volumes of books from the University of Illinois and other schools are going to be available online thanks to Google's book scanning project. School officials say the partnership will speed up a digitization process that might have taken hundreds of years. The agreement covers Google, the 11 schools in the conference, and the University of Chicago. It'll also create an online repository to collectively archive and manage works scanned by Google within the school's library systems. Downtown Champaign will go wireless by the end of the summer. The city has agreed to let Pavlov Media install wireless internet equipment designed for outdoor use in the downtown area as far west as Westside Park. The company won't charge anybody for access. An attorney says he's giving Galesburg school officials until 5 o'clock today to hand over high school diplomas to 5 students. Peoria attorney Jeffrey Green says a lawsuit could be filed if school officials fail to deliver the diplomas that the students were denied because they were cheered during graduation in violation of a school policy. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk about the weather. A little cool here today, but it is just absolutely gorgeous, though I have the idea that there may be rainfall on the way sometime in the not-too-distant future.
That is correct. A fairly vigorous little cool front will be coming across the Midwest as we go through the latter part of this week going into the weekend. It will shut down the warming machine, which will get underway here tomorrow. We'll be quite a bit warmer across a big part of the Midwest tomorrow. In fact, we'll go from one extreme to the other. We'll probably be looking at temperatures getting back into the lower 90s and across portions of the Midwest tomorrow. But right after that, when that cool front comes through, as we go on into the end of the week, we'll find temperatures cooling back into the 70s. So not quite yet ready for summer, but it's around the corner. A ridge of high pressure is currently being advertised to build up across the plains as we go into the late weekend and early part of next week. And that particular round of warming will probably be a lot more significant, lasting several days, and we'll see a lot of 80 and 90 degree temperatures. You mentioned the rain. There is the potential for some rain to develop with each of the little changes in temperature that are expected. First, the cool front that comes across the region here as we go Thursday into Friday. There'll be some thunderstorms that'll move very quickly across the region. There could be some locally intense rainfall, but I think most of it's going to be very light and fast moving across the region, leaving us with only a tease in a potential change in soil moisture. The next rain event after that is actually going to be associated with a warm front that comes in front of that ridge of high pressure that's going to start building up across the region. And that's when we may see some locally intense thunderstorms that could produce 1-inch plus amounts of rainfall. Unfortunately, those thunderstorms are not going to be well distributed across the Midwest. I'd say probably 10% of the region might get an inch of rain. Most areas are going to end up with a half inch or less. But there will at least be some shower activity around before the heat comes on. And then next week looks pretty tough for a big part of the Midwest with limited rainfall and temperatures very warm, as I said before.
It may be a very good thing that USDA says the crop is in the best condition in the last 10 years. This past Monday, as of Sunday, June the 3rd, I guess, because we're looking like we're coming into some pretty tough conditions. Have you got any insight on further out than that and what the summer might look like?
Yeah, actually, it looks like as we go into July, these tough conditions will come back at us. We'll kind of bounce around a little bit in the latter part of June where we have dry and warm periods like this and then get an opportunity for some rainfall. But most of the rain is going to be below average. And when we go into July, there's the potential that this high-pressure ridge will come back and kind of sit around here for a lot longer period of time, giving us a bigger potential stress situation for some of the crops. But we are thinking that maybe July will be as bad as it gets and conditions might start to get a little bit better, at least for a little while after that. The problem that I've got, though, is that we're going to get far enough behind on our soil moisture that it's going to be a struggle for the balance of the summer, even if we don't have quite the heat or the persistent dryness that we may have in the month of July. So a lot is going on. I know you don't have a lot of time today. There's some changes going on in the ocean temperatures out there in the Pacific that suggest that this evolution towards La Nina may get interrupted for a brief period later this month, going into early July. That could also have a more positive impact for production potentials later this year, although don't get me wrong, I'm not expecting ideal crop conditions across the country.
Anything to add on that before I let you go? We do have a little extra time.
Well, the main thing is that this little interruption to the evolution of La Nina will likely slow down that evolution. We'll end up seeing some warmer water coming into the eastern Pacific Ocean that will likely slow down or actually diminish some of the cold water anomalies that are in the eastern Pacific Ocean right now. And so this movement towards La Nina will be slowed down. And the end result of that is that we may lose a little bit of this drier bias we're picking up on for the Midwest right now because of the evolution towards La Nina. The odds are pretty good that we're not talking about a collapse in the development of this, but we are talking about perhaps a slowdown in it, and that will likely give us maybe an opportunity for a little break in the weather later on in the summer.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us.
All right, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the commodity markets. I'm Todd Gleason.